It's actually going to be Mike fixes all the problems in Shadowrun right now. That's not true.
Actually going to be proof in print why you never want Mike to be a game master.
That's
you screw these characters so bad.
I have a rep. The last thing is the most interesting thing, and it's as all types of licensees in this regard, it is the most tentative. So what I tell you today, for all I know, Monday has been canceled. And that is we have signed option papers for an independent Shadowrun movie.
Like The Matrix wasn't enough?
We're talking a low-budget independent film. Basically, the option means is that we've given them the okay to use Shadowrun to get their money, basically. They sign the papers that say, we have X amount of dollars now. In order to make this movie, we need X times a million. And we can now use the resources available to do such things. In the case of this, it would be my time to approve story concepts and to use Shadowrun product and stuff like that, and pitches and things like that. These are what they call the money people. This is great. There's all kinds of new words that you learn. They have seed money, but they need money people to give after their pitch. It's like, wow, you guys are like not even speaking English. But they have people that we know personally through FASA. We're not talking, you know, when we talk independent film, we're not talking, you know, $15 million. We're talking $5 to $7 million. And as is always with Shadowrun and any FASA property, we maintain tight control over it. And so I have total, we have, as fast as, and through me, we have script approval and plot approval and such things like that. So it's not we signed our, you know, basically signed the baby away and gave it to somebody else to make, you know, Shadowrun animated singing cartoon. We basically still maintain control, which, you know, if you know anything about how that kind of stuff works, it's that's the problem with why a lot of our stuff doesn't get made in the films, because we want control. We work too hard at it to basically just turn it over to somebody and then have you know, Captain America fight the Red Skull, and the Red Skull's basically wearing like a plastic bag over his head and stuff like that, and it goes direct to video in like 5 minutes and it's laughed at for the next 20 years. It's like the worst movie ever made. We don't do that. We work too hard at our properties to keep them in line. And there's a lot of, you would think that would be cool. You'd say Hollywood guys would think, well, that's really cool, but they don't. They want total control. They're artists also, and so they want their control, and they want to put their stamp on things. And it's really hard to do to negotiate that. And there's a lot of companies. As BattleTech will get more successful, for instance, on the BattleTech front, we are in very serious, heavy negotiations to do a live-action MechWarrior TV show. And that's, you know, the bottom line is that's because the computer company that puts our stuff out is called Microsoft. there's no thing in there, you know, somebody says Microsoft's willing to spend that much money? Oh, well, then we're jumping on board. Lemmings. But, you know, that kind of stuff that happens, and that's the kind of respect stuff like that gets. So, you know, Shadowrun does garner that. And as in all business practices, I mean, there are companies in Hollywood that would, you know, buy your option on Shadowrun, but they would want it to be exclusive, which means that they were stuck with them holding it. And, in fact, you know, we sat on this movie thing for a long time because somebody said that they wanted to buy Shadowrun, and we asked them what they knew about it, and they said, basically, this would be our version of the Matrix. And I'm like, see, then that's not what we want. And there's nothing that, you know, it's one-third, you know, one-fifth of what Shadowrun's all about, you know. And, you know, shopping that around, you know, that's just going to get stale. You know, it's going to be stale in weeks. And that's great that you we'd rather keep it tighter, under more under control.
And that's all come to fore in the last, literally the last 3-4 weeks. So we'll see how that goes. I don't know. You know, I saw an outline of a plot idea, and I rejected it immediately. And so we'll see what comes up next. I won't even go into telling anyone because I don't want to make things really all crabby about what's going to happen next. Let's see. Some other biz stuff. Because we work with the printed word, we end up making mistakes. These are the errata, most updated errata for SR3, various source books. There's a couple of new magic in the shadow brushes. But the rest of it is pretty standard. And then the man and machine and companion that we use up here. You get it at the end of the thing if you want them. Well, that's all the... Yeah, we made it 200th, like it wasn't Fields of Fire. If my character buys the Panther Salt Cannon out of the Field of Fire store rather than out of the Street Samurai store, can I get it for $200? No. It's a typo.
Tell him to buy a PVC pipe and pack the damn round down inside that.
Typo. Well, it's the Matrix book. Yesterday when I had my little developer time at the booth, basically the question that I answered was what's the difference between this and VR2 over and over and over again. So here I can do it to whatever 7,500 people and do it once. The difference is, most importantly, I guess the main difference is in attitude. Our big problem and what we've been striving against basically since we did SR3 is preconceived notions. And one of the preconceived notions of the Matrix was that, one, don't bother with it. It's insanely difficult to do anything with. And two, mages hear the word Matrix and they get like vomity and fall into a heap in the corner because it's all technological. And both of those are obviously, in my opinion, incredibly untrue. The Matrix system as a game system actually fits real well with what's already going on in SR3, and if you haven't integrated it, give it a shot. That's all I can ask. I mean, I can't ask more. I run Decker characters all the time within the regular setup of the game, and it very rarely turns into that old SR2 of, people, where's the Mountain Dew? Is there one in the Mountain Dew? The entire group, and one guy's at the table going, did I get the info? It doesn't turn into that anymore. And I think you got to give it a shot because it much like a lot of the changes that have been made, it's re-education in a lot of ways. And the Decker had the worst rep of all the characters in Shadow. The Matrix did, and I don't think it's very hard. And I think we actually talk about that a lot in this book and show it and try to re-educate on just running the Decker. The second thing was just the whole concept of what is the Matrix and what is what you use the Matrix for. It's maybe a better sell now than it was 10 years ago when it came out because basically if you need to do an info search on something, you have no fear of going to your computer and going to, whatever fogdog.com and hitting a button and saying, find me all the information on, sex. And you get it by the truckloads, download your computer, and you do whatever the heck you want with it. And it doesn't matter if you're, a computer illiterate, and all you really basically know is how to hit the, connect to the internet button and type in the words button, or if you're a, 85-year-old person, or if you're 12, you basically can do an info search on the net. Shadowrun had always been the fact that people own cyber terminals. That was their telephone and their newspaper and their TV and all that kind of stuff rolled into one unit. So everybody owned one, but somehow mages were afraid to use it. And if you weren't a Decker, you couldn't find out what day it was on the computer without without doing 47. Our job, we felt, was to show the Matrix in basically a more modern light, a more modern today light of what it is. And the first five or six chapters from basically talk about the user, talk about what the information is and how it gets to you, and who owns it, and you know what you do with it. You know, you receive your email on it, you receive your phone calls on it, you receive your TV shows on it. And yeah, you know, it has always been funny that basically since the very beginning of Shadowrun, mages and street samurais and dragons and everybody's posted to Shadow Talk, but for some reason if you said that in a game session, well, you know, mate, why don't you look that up and see, you know, the nearest talismonger, how much he's charging for, you know, ritual materials. Oh my God, games. Computer, you know, I'll get headaches and I'll die and I'll lose my essence. What the hell are you talking about? Do an info search. We realized that was a preconceived notion that needed to be changed, and I believe, at least with the first five chapters, we did that. Then it was basically a lot of the same stuff cleaned up and expanded from VR2, cyber terminal construction, new ICE, all the sysops that weren't in SR3, all the ICE that wasn't in SR3, some new stuff like worms and things like that, programming, all the stuff that you don't put in your main rule book because it's just extra and additional info that you don't necessarily need to play right away. We have a section on doing info searches, both the etiquette, hanging out in the virtual lounge with some guy that looks like a giant floating eyeball, trying to pry information out of him. The same thing that runners do when they hang out in bars. We've talked about Deckers online. In novels and in the Shadowrun fiction of trying to get information out of a guy online meets. We never have given you the parameters on how to handle that. We have now. And then we've also given you the straight up text-based, I guess, lack of a better term, searches that the mage can do and the merc can do, where they just literally type in and run an info search. Then, of course, we reformatted and updated the SR3 and made them complete the Otaku rules. And we also did the we cleaned up and represented the frames and agents and self-operating program rules. And then the last part of the book after the info searches and the AIs and all the mysterious weirdness of the Matrix was basically we did what we did with the other books, and we realized again we talk about a lot of stuff but we never show the game masters what to do with it, and so we outlined the corps that specialize in the Matrix. I mean, we all know, oh, Renraku does this, Novatek does that, and Cross does this, but you know, we've mentioned all kinds of things from Francis Neuronet, which is an office favorite comp corp, to a bunch of other stuff. And we never talk about them, so we gave little write-ups on that in the back, and that's just seed, that's just game seed, plot ideas and stuff like that. But we realized too is that when doing a re-education of everybody to do the Matrix product meant that we needed to also show it in a fictional light too, from a Deckard perspective. This is all the rules, and it can get dry in those rules. So in order to do it from a Deckard perspective and try to show the breadth of what the Matrix has to offer, we decided to, instead of trying to squeeze it in a book and then promising it to people and then cutting it later because we didn't have room, we decided to just spin that all off into a singular product called Target Matrix. And a Target Matrix is going to have a lot more sites than like a physical Target book does. I think grids alone, there's what, 8, 9 grids, 11 grids. There's under the Data Haven section, besides the Denver Data Haven and it's a Sudbury Nexi. We have I'm trying to look at the board. What is like 6 other Data Havens? We have the whole Seattle grid outlined and what you can see and do there, and what's there from that arch. Our RTG view of the Seattle grid. The
we're going to put in a section just on hosts. Everything from like a, I don't even remember any of the hosts. give me a host, Rob.
Lone Star.
Lone Star host, there you go. And stuff that characters use. You know, you want to know about the Lone Star host. Why, I don't know, but you do. And then section on the players, basically. We got a lot of positive response from having Dodger and Ronan and characters and packs and stuff like that in the Brain Scan adventure set. And that led us to believe that, you know, we can go ahead and put in named players without people killing them. That was a theory. You never put a named character in a book because all the players want to kill them. like, whatever. But you got to realize that if you kill them in a group, it doesn't, I don't care. So we decided to go and do a write-off on a lot of the players. A lot of the people that I mentioned in novels, Archangel, Rennie's in there. Dodger's already, yeah, we already did Dodger. Fast Jack.
Jane in the Box.
Jane in the Box in there.
Captain Chaos?
Who? I didn't hear what you said.
Captain Chaos.
Yeah, actually, we forgot him when we started. Ironically, we were looking at our list and we went, we don't have Captain Chaos. it's the race problem all over again. So then we have, you know, so there's that, and then the section, the thing will finish up with the anomalies of the Matrix, like, you know, everybody's favorite fat boy, Thomas Roxborough, and some of the named otaku that seem to have disappeared after Renraku, and things like that. Dr. Halberstam.
Yes.
Can't do anything. He's not my favorite fat man. So that's Target Matrix book, and that's, we're actually working on that now. We can talk about it. Total ineptitude. I'm trying to remember anything that's in it. Let's see. Then I'm going to kind of jump around with product and say things possibly out of order. We're just not sure. Like I said, we lost 2 months at the beginning of the year, and we're still trying to figure out how to basically put 25 pounds into a 5-pound bag. And so I'm just going to go right to the next product that we're doing. Not the next product, but the next main product, which is going to be the last of the SR3 rulebook updates. Thank the maker. It is going to be the Rigor 3 book, for all lack of creativity on our part. The Rigor 3 book was the first book that I did, the first rulebook, and boy, have I learned a lot since then. One, don't put it in alphabet vehicles, but alphabetical order by the name of the company that makes them. I mean, if I could do anything back, I would take that one thing back. I go, unbelievable. I can't find stuff in that book. I mean, and again, like VR2 and like all the other advanced books, I mean, we put so much of that book, specifically that book in SR3, that when you pull out the SR3 stuff in there, basically you're forcing people to buy the same book twice, in my opinion. So originally, you know, we're going to do it the same kind of workover that we've done. There's a lot of stuff that I got a stack of questions and queries and errata and all kinds of things that are in that book that I need to, that we need to address, fixing some of the more major, the goal would be to fix all of the like construction quirks that are in there, to offer up, as we've done with all the stuff, some new tech and some new, you know, my philosophy of introduction of things into a game world is, I don't like, you know, coming out with the laser orbital book of Shadowrun. There's been laser orbitals in Shadowrun? Oh, yeah, we didn't tell you, but they've always been there. Well, no, I find that to be a very insulting thing to do to the fans who've been following the game in a rich world, to then just basically surprise an entire thing on them. So I prefer to do what I call upgrade of tech And since we introduced basically the robotics and the forms and stuff like that in Rigger 2, they will be updated then for Rigger 3, so that they maintain the same tech curve as everything else in the universe. Stuff isn't just sprung out of whole cloth on you. And then we have to do a bunch of jerry-rigged back-figuring on things. So that'll be updated. We are actually doing the majority of the compiling and stuff like that right now. So if you ask me a specific question, I might say, yeah, we are looking into that. But in general, it's going to have the same type of job that was been done on Matrix and the same thing that's been done on Matrix. And one of the things that we want to do, I'll say it, if it's not there, then you can say, well, Mike, you said it, okay, yeah. We would like to do a quicker single-off combat resolution system because we do realize how complex the one that's in the base one is, and we're going to give it a shot. We don't know it yet. I can't say this is what the base mechanics are going to be like or anything like that, but it's something that we know that is a problem for some. I mean, in the middle of a game, again, you have the old school Decker problem where the Riggers ended up generating a bunch of numbers and math and slowing the game down so we can figure out a one-off system. I mean, there's for every guy that you say, let's do a quick one-off solution, there's another guy that says, oh, but it's so, I love, spending 72 hours working on the Rigger character and his vehicle and doing all this stuff. And then the system's there. We're not changing anything. We're not removing the system. We're just basically offering an option. I think that's all on the Rigger 3 stuff. I didn't know when we started Shadow 3 that I was going to end up having to do six advanced robots. I was under the impression that, we would just kind of do them when we felt like we were doing nothing. And I was really naive. As those books became more involved and intense, and I delivered to people what I said that I was going to deliver to people, which was all the gear in the specific books. I wasn't going to cut the corners and do, cyberware book and then do another cyberware book 6 months later. I was going to try to get all the info that I could in the sources that I didn't, that so you had them. You had the cyberware book and the magic book and the books like that. What ended up being sacrificed is the story of Shadowrun. And that's kind of sad because the story is what I, what you dig the most. It's what basically drew everybody to Shadowrun to begin with. Come on, let's keep this perfect. Man, Shadowrun 1 was not the greatest game system in the history of man that people couldn't live without playing. And it's always a frustrating thing when you have to put story off to the side to do mechanics. So we felt we started out we had the mini story, if you will, of the Renraku Arcology while we've been doing all the rule books. And now it's time to go back into story mode, and story mode is going to launch with a product called Year of the Comet. For those who have basically been hearing me talk about this for like 2 years. Year of the Comet is a catch-all title for the fact that in the year 2061, Halley's Comet returns to Earth. Hit Earth. I'm not hitting Earth. Obsidian don't live on Halley's Comet. No. Not made of orichalcum. Just a comet. But it's a cool comet because it's stuff like that, that just... I did a lot of research on Halley's Comet. Actually, there's like there's a website that lets you crash a meteor into Earth, and you can see how much damage it does. There's also one done by PBS. If you go to the PBS American Experience page, there's one that lets you pick a street address and detonate an atomic bomb.
Yeah. 3 different magnitudes.
Yeah, 3 different magnitudes, and you can do the wind direction, it's the really big bombs though, because it's not like the one that they blew up like in Chicago for the Bug City thing. It's they're huge ass bombs, and it's just funny to like write an address and just go, wow, that's pretty deadly.
But it's kind of cool. And thank God for the web, huh? Where else can you just blow stuff up? So the Halley's Comet has a reputation throughout history of all kinds of stuff. And I've got kind of glad that we actually waited until after 2000 to work on the book, because the media hype and the insanity that ensued basically on an arbitrary date flux in the Roman calendar. I can't even imagine, you know, if you lived in just that level alone and turn around and in 2061 have both Halley's Comet and basically what amounts to the 50th anniversary of the awakening at one time. Just the freaks and psychos and paranoid schizos that'll come out of the woodwork is worth the price of admission. And, you know, Shadowrun's nothing if not a freak schizo. game. So, the Year of the Comet's going to involve all that, and as we like to say in the Stan Lee School of Talking, much, much more! But it's going to be a plotline kickoff. To use an example out of Shadowrun, it would be akin to like a Bug City or a Dunkelzahn Portfolio of the Dragon or the Election. Would be a product that we're looking at now to be what I can call a benchmark product. It's a product that you use to generate ideas from. I mean, who would guess that? I wouldn't have when I did the product and even when we concepted it and Steve wrote it, that there'd still be references back to Dunkelzahn as little 5 years later in GamePod, 6 years later, not even touching most of this other stuff. I would never guess it when we worked on it. It was just, hey, here's a, you know, let's hey, one corporation give like a director seat to a guy in another corporation. It'd be funny. Little did we know, you know, how it was. It's total serendipity. The editor that was, we sat in a room. Steve Kenson, who wrote the project, generated about, you know, like 30% of those little things. Yeah. And then basically we sat in a room one night with pizza and therapist from the company that said, you know, blah, 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 you know, hey, it would be cool if a guy used a little like this as a revenge and just screwed people. you know, what happens if you're like a, you know, like this like guy and, you know, you owe your money for a long time? Man, that's funny. So we basically made sat down and did it, and the editors went through, you know, we're not going to sit there and figure out names at that time. It was, you know, 10 o'clock by the time we basically tripled the amount that Steve had done. And, you know, the editor just picks a name out of a book, and, you know, lo and behold, we have, you know, 6 years of Shadowrun history all tied up in the one sentence. So, you know, the story of Shadowrun is just so lucky. but that's the kind of thing that we're looking at doing here. It'll be a fictional source material book. And we'll follow it up with things that will revert back to it, but we're not doing a product series of a series of products called The Year of the Comet, colon, something. The products will stand alone regardless of how much you know of the events going on. I think the first one is Target Awakened Lands, and that's going to feature Australia. And unlike the other Target, it's almost going to be kind of a combination of like Smuggler's Haven and Target Matrix, and the fact that the rest of it is just going to be magical sites and nano lines and important magical places around the world. It's not going to do probably some of Amazonia. Just talk about Amazonia. There's a handful of places. Amazonia being one of them. Japan being another one. Possibly Hong Kong, because I think Hong Kong is cooler. Japan being a third. As well as Europe. That it's tough to put into it. Figure out how to do it is a straight up Target book, unless it's the main focus of it, and I don't want to reduce a Target book was meant to do smaller places. I don't really even have a source style anymore to do a place like Amazonia, because the place books just sell so poorly when they're a single place.